call the May meeting of the RAC to order. We do not have a quorum present. We need another person to have a quorum, so we will not be making any decisions in the hopefully few minutes that remain until we get a quorum. We did not, we only know of two that were not coming, that had RSVP'd that they weren't able to make it. So hopefully we have some others that are caught up in TAPS traffic, we'll hope. Because the game is starting, I think, in a half an hour. We'll start, as usual, with our public comment period. Do we have no one signed up for public comment? Okay. In that case, I'm going to proceed. We can't officially vote on the agenda, but by default, we're going to continue with the agenda as written. We will skip over the past meeting minutes, which means, wow, sooner than you expected, Lynn. I'd like to introduce Lynn Bowersox. Some of you know her because she's as frequent as any visitor we have to the RAC. And she's the Assistant General Manager and the Department of Customer Service, the Department of Customer Service Communications and Marketing, the longest title I know of, but I'm sure there are other very long ones. And Lynn, it's all yours. She's already gotten the 1 minute pitch about be sure to tell us what it is she wants from us. And it's all yours.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to see you all again, and I always appreciate your the time that you take out of your schedules to come to these meetings and give us your advice and counsel. So, excuse me, as you all may recall, following the L'Enfant incident in January, one of the things that we did immediately was go out to our customers and do some surveys and say, do you know about the incident? Is it something that gives you pause or lingering concern? Has it changed your travel patterns in any way? And is there information you need from us about safety? And with that, yes, ma'am.
Could you get a little closer to the mic?
Sure.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, usually I'm quite loud. It's the end of the day. So.
Thank you.
Sure. So in any case, in that survey, our customers said clearly that their 85% of them were aware of the incident. They knew about it mostly from news broadcasts, that they virtually none changed their travel choices or patterns as a result of it, that they all continued to feel safe using the system. And when pressed, they said, well, you know, if you wanted to give us more information about safety on the system, the one thing you could do is tell us how to help ourselves in the event of an emergency, because often we don't really read the signs on the trains or in the stations until something happens. And so following
that,
we
have a quorum now, so we can make decisions even if you give us any to make.
Okay, thank you. So in light of that finding from our customer surveys, we produced a new passenger safety video. And it doesn't do everything everybody wants it to do, but it's a very basic tool that we were able to get out very quickly through the TV media and online that just basically told people what very basic actions to take in the event of a fire smoke emergency. And we also updated our website because we really feel like this is the main portal of accessible information for people to have quick access to both the video and then additional information. And when I went on the web and I looked at what we had in the safety pages, it hadn't been refreshed in some time, and it was really more geared towards information about the police department, crime reports and statistics and things of that nature. So what we did was immediately make this landing page much more customer-focused and put on here, and you have a copy of it in front of you, much more emergency preparedness information and answers to frequently asked questions and sort of what every rider needs to know. So that brings me to my reason for appearing before you today, because I have to say that I've been underwhelmed by the amount of public utilization of this information. While the video got a lot of attention and had a lot of traffic to it online and through the various media outlets that posted it on their websites, the customers are not seeking for their information on safety, and we wish they would. You know, it's good to be an informed consumer. And so I will tell you that following, in the couple of days following our announcement that we had this new information, we got about 100 people who visited the page, and then it went right back down to very few. And that's, remember that we have more than 100,000 visitors a day, but they're using travel planners and other things that they're coming to the website for. And so I'm here today to ask you all, as riders, as consumers, as people who think about what riders need, what more we could do to make this information useful to people or to get our customers to be more engaged in learning about passenger safety. There are a number of things that I will tell you that we have done. We have put things on the home page to drive them to this. We've sent out tweets and Facebook announcements. We've sent out news releases. You know, we've used all of our channels that we have to promote the availability of the information. But then again, we're not getting the kind of traffic that we want. So with that, I would just ask you all to just open the floor to see if there are suggestions that you have for us about how to get riders to embrace or engage in getting themselves armed with information about how to ride safely.
So any of you that want, that you have questions or comments, yeah, just go ahead and raise your sign. And let me just say one thing in advance. I think that I understand that you want people to take advantage of the information that's available because it's for their own good as well as the good of the company. But it's kind of good news that they're not so preoccupied with safety that they feel like they better go out there and read that right away. I think it can be considered good news. But anyway, I did, as I mentioned to Lynn earlier, I kind of warned all of you that we wanted to talk about this. So I'm hoping some of you, I know Catherine has come armed, so I'm going to start this way, start with Patrick, and then go around this way.
I think particularly in with my committee, and we've heard this over the last 3 or 4 months, I think the demonstrations like we had last month in New Carrollton area, those demonstrations are important. I think the first demonstration that we had was good for first responders, firefighters, WMATA staff. But what I'm seeing is that we need to put together some demonstrations so that individuals with disabilities, at least the group that I work with, they have lots of questions. How are service animals going to be treated? What do I do with my wheelchair? How does that work? They actually want to be able to go through a particular drill so that they can learn from themselves, learn by doing, I guess, is what I'm saying. So I think that anything that we can schedule where we can open it up to the public and put sort of a routine schedule so that you can run the public through some of the drills, different scenarios, I think is going to be very important.
Thank you.
I have both a question and a comment / suggestion, I suppose. What level of penetration are you hoping for? Given the number of riders of the system on any given day, are you hoping that 10% of them will have seen these safety videos, or at least one person in each car will have?
Right. So if you think about the fact that, just take the rail system, so you probably have in the rush hour periods among regular commuters because you can't be as surgical with respect to visitors and occasional riders. But with respect to our regular commuters, it's probably 400,000 trips a day. So I think if we could even get half that number, the odds of somebody on a card being informed are pretty good. Does that answer your question?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And as far as suggestions on how to get this out a little more, I suppose I'm looking in large part at my peer group, the millennial Gen Y kind of thing, where we are very, very focused on our phones, and we use apps for a lot of things, including we're perpetually looking at our apps to find out when the next train is coming. That is how I would say most of my peers are finding out, are dealing with Metro. We don't go to the website. We certainly don't go to Metro in person. We never call them. But we are continually using apps, whether it be Metro's mobile site or some other kind of an app. So if there's any way to get this video embedded in, I realize that a lot of these apps are being developed by somebody other than WMATA, but if it could be embedded somehow in, say, WMATA's mobile site or something, everybody, it seems, is standing on that train platform waiting for their train, continually checking an app, looking to see when the next train is coming, and killing time on their phone in some way, shape, or form. So if you have a 3-minute video for them to watch, and it's sitting there looking them in the face while they're checking to see that they have 3 minutes until their next train comes, hopefully, anyway, you might get a few more eyes looking at it just as a way to kill the time.
Good suggestion. Thank you.
I am also thinking on the other end from the millennials to the older generation.
The baby boomers. We are baby boomers.
The baby boomers. Okay. The more seniors or the, you know.
Baby boomers sounds younger than seniors.
Okay. That they work better with handouts and that kind of stuff, that if they see it, they will take it and they will read it, as opposed to other people that anything they will throw out. That's one thing. Another thing is I have a concern for the people that speak other languages. So we also have to target them because they are the people that have more limited resources to read, because they're not going to check on the website. They're not going to see it on if they play it on TV and PSAs and all that stuff, it's not going to be for them. So there we have to figure something how to target to them.
The comments of the previous commentators, I think the app idea is great, but I also think that one of the greatest strengths of the Metro system and both the buses and the rail in general is the, you know, power you have as people in a captive situation. You know, they're standing there, they're looking around, they're sitting in a seat, they're looking around. I mean, I don't know the rest of the people here when the new harassment ads were introduced. I certainly noticed them as something different that I hadn't noticed before. So I think a distilled version of maybe new or refreshed safety information, you know, presented in sort of an eye-catching way in the buses or the trains could grab people's attention, because the standard safety information in the train, everyone gets so used to looking at, I think they don't even see it anymore. But if it was presented in a new, you know, sort of livelier format, I think it could grab attention. Like I know the harassment ads certainly caught mine.
One of the first things I thought of is what I could do, and that is when I work at a relatively small agency, about 40 people, and I could ask the IDC agency, and I could ask the director to, you know, send, because we do send out messages about safety and crime and so forth. So if we could ask people to disseminate it, send a link or so forth, that's something that, you know, that could help. Also, I'm a Gen Xer, and two things work with me, and one of the things my agency does is a lot of outreach. And for the baby boomer community, as was mentioned, sometimes it works well with face-to-face communication with outreaches. So I don't know if Metro can do a safety roadshow, so to speak, not to take a replica of a train car somewhere, but something that could be a little more interactive with people that might not be on Twitter.
I actually looked at what I could get on my phone today, and because I do use the mobile web to find out when to get on trains, and I learned a couple of different things. Number one, I was on some part of it and went on down to the bottom and saw that I could get to the transit police. I had nary a clue that I could do that. That's a good thing, because we've talked about how that's hard to do, don't know what, but it was just by chance that I found it, because it was at the bottom. In terms of the video, I found it because that picture was on flashing by when the website was up. So I pushed on it, but then there was text. Then there was a 3-minute, and then I didn't know before there was a 1-minute. And it's in English, and they have Spanish. They have those, and then what other languages? In my mind, it would be best to have an instant link to at least the 1 minute, maybe English and Spanish, but the English or the 1 minute version, and then where can you go get more? Visitors that I'm seeing on the train all have their hand map. They probably all have cell phones, but in trying to figure out where to go, they're looking at the hand map, which says to me, either saying it on that, if you don't already, they will look at that, or they could probably be convinced to go and look on the web. That's it.
Hi. Is this on? Hi. Avani Gala from Virginia. I have a couple of points. So, one, you asked, when do writers kind of look for this information? I would never look for the information unless I needed it, and it would be in the moment and I was looking for it. Like, I don't think that I would be sitting at home and kind of perusing the website looking for the safety information. So that's just a point to kind of keep in mind, is I think that I would look for it only when I needed it in kind of an emergency situation. Also, I think that the points that have been brought up here are really great, that it kind of applies to if you're in the metro and you're standing around not doing anything, you can look around and see some of that information. What I think a lot of times is the conversation that's happening around safety and security is like emergency security is something where it happened with the trains. But another aspect is the criminal aspect of like just being safe on a train. Like, is something going to happen to you that has nothing to do with the train? And I think the one deterrent to crime is the idea that there's something out there that's looking, that's watching over me. There's a lot of ads that say harassment, like, what does it say? If it's unwanted, it's harassment. That is, in my mind, more of a I'm looking out for myself ad, as opposed to there are cameras here and they can see what's going on. Or there are police sitting in XYZ location and they can see what's going on. So I think that's another aspect to consider as well. And what that, again, just to kind of recap, that would be ads that say someone out there is watching as a deterrent to crime.
That's a really good point, and I just want to comment on that for a minute. I don't know if you saw it, but we made an arrest this week of a young man who, while on the system, assaulted an older passenger. Cameras captured that. We released the video. The public helped identify that individual, and it led to his arrest. There are many, many such incidents of that. And one of the things that we hope comes from that is not only the identification of the suspect, which leads to conviction, but also that it would have that deterrent effect of don't bother to commit a crime on the system because, look, we catch every time. So I think that's a point really well taken, and we are actively engaged in trying to use the cameras both in service to our passengers and to send that deterrence message. So I hear you loud and clear on that.
Hi. Thanks for listening to us. Just a few ideas. The first one is, this may seem superficial, but I'm just looking at this web page, and in terms of being attention-getting for people, it's under the safety and security headline. I think you get more people's attention if you have something further up that says emergency preparedness, as opposed to burying that in a section that, I don't know, it doesn't seem very interesting. I think it would be an interesting exercise to go through and figure out exactly what it is that you want people to know in terms of how they should behave, because there's a lot of situations and a lot of things that people would have to do in an emergency situation. A lot of them are common sense, and people would react in the situation accordingly, or they could figure it out rather quickly. There are some things that maybe not, some things that would be counterintuitive, For example, don't start running because it's going to start a stampede and it's going to kill people. You know, don't push forward because if the platform is full and you're pushing onto it, chances are you're going to push somebody off of the platform onto the train. These are things that run counterintuitive to someone's self-preservation mechanism. So I would recommend that, you know, you guys think about that and even, you know, have volunteers go through these, subject volunteers to these situations and see how they react, see how quickly they can find the button to communicate or see how quickly how they respond to certain instructions that are given. Because, first of all, I think it's important to do that, but second of all, I think it helps you refine your message to people. You know, I think the most important messages that Metro transfers to people are just little blurbs. You know, you always remember the one, watch your phone by the doors. It's very simple. You understand it. So, you know, if you guys can figure out specifically what it is that you want people to know so that they're, when they're in the situation, they will react accordingly and not the way that you would just naturally react, I think is very important. This may sound silly, but if you want people to, if there are some critical things that people would react negatively to in, or would react the wrong way in a certain situation, I honestly think that the number one a way that you could get it more into the public consciousness, I don't know if you guys have this capability, but partnering with a movie or a TV show where you have something occurring in a metro and people, you see what happens and people, you know, there's buzz around it and you see, you know, if there was a big movie that came out and there have been, or something happens on a metro and you see, you know, people reacting in good or bad ways, and the ones that react in the good ways are the ones that live, people are going to remember that. And it's going to be just a one-time thing, and you don't even have to worry about it after that. Or, you know, even like internet series or something like that. The other thing is, to be honest with you, if you want people to be more interested in this kind of stuff, sometimes you got to scare people. I know it kind of counterintuitive, but I think that a lot of times people go about their daily lives and they don't really realize the dangers that they're potentially in. You know, so I'm probably the same way. I look at safety and security, I'm like, you know, when am I ever going to need this? And the truth is, something horrible could happen when you're in the metro. So I don't know how you scare people that way. I mean, you know, you have your ads for the, you know, the bags and the animal and the bags. And I think that's a good balance between, yeah, this guy looks scary, but, you know, it gets people's attention. But I think it's good that people be aware that this is something that could happen. But I do go back, sorry to be long, Barbara, but I do, going back specifically psychologically, what it is that you, what it is that people are going to be asked, they're going to be asked to do a lot of things in those situations, most of which they'll probably figure out or they'll do naturally correctly, but then there's going to be some where you're going to need them to act differently than that. And those what should be what you focus on. For the greater good, you know, don't run or, you know, don't, I don't know. I don't even know. I'm kind of curious as to what those would be. Thank you.
Well, welcome to our meeting. I may be repeating what several other people said, but I'm going to do it anyway. First is, I think that you have an opportunity to grab people's attention while they're waiting for the subway and when they're on the subway, because people have sort of a free time. Certainly is for me. So a couple of things I would suggest in that context is that you would have the station managers and the train operators remind people that there is a video and remind people that there are instructions on each car on how to exit, what to do in an emergency, get their attention. Secondly, I would at least experiment, since the video seems not to be grabbing people's a lot of attention. I would experiment with some printed material. Again, make it available at the stations. People have some time to read it while they're waiting for the subway. People have some time to read it on the subway. I don't think the model, one model I think about, and we, it would be, it's, it's not that comparable, and I don't know how you duplicate it, but, you know, we all fly. You know, we all hear the same instructions when we get on a plane. You know, I've sort of internalized that now. You know, whenever I sit down on a plane, I look to see where the closest exit is, things like that. And I have it. And there's something I can read in the pocket in front of me if I have a question. Now, I'm not suggesting you put a plastic diagram on the floor, but I think brochures, people can read them at their own speed. You know, go through a video, you're subject to the speed of the video. You can't go back, I don't think. You have to start all over again. So anyway, those are just a couple of my suggestions.
At our last meeting, I allowed the public to ask questions, and I was reminded that I was supposed to do that first, not last, but guess I did it again. So I'm going to give them a chance, but first I want to say, yeah, I've gotten lots of ideas just even listening to everybody else. I think you can't overstate the power of that weight on the platform. And it's so many different things that you could try. And it could be having somebody down there with a laptop that can show it to people that are sitting there on the bench. I mean, or, you know, especially if you can see there's not a train coming for a few minutes, you know, if you can show the 1 minute. Or you can give them a wallet card that has the number of the police and the URL for the video or the URL for whatever you want them to have. I looked on the back of my card, and there's already so much on that. I don't know. It can't get any smaller and have anybody still read it, I think. Well, especially the baby boomers, since we're talking about that tonight. But something that might catch their eye, you know, it's like, do you know what to do when this happened? Or have a quiz or a test or, you know, like we got caught. Catherine was the star that night when they said, and the emergency Mr. Bodmer that was here, and which side of the tunnel do you go to? And you know, we're all going, oh, well, left, right. Catherine knew it was the lighted one. And I think, you know, just the quiz, the signs, you know, I know there's often the you're trying to get people also to read the alerts, to get the alerts. I know that. And it's always up there on the display. Well, it could also be the URL for the video. Anyway, just capitalizing on all these other things. So do we have members of the public that would like to speak and to give her some feedback about how to get the word out or get people to look at the site, look at the video? Do either of you want to say anything? Don't feel like you have to. Okay. At least I try. So go ahead, Will.
Will White, representing Prince George's County. Good to see you. All right. I sometimes can come into a room and I have one idea, and then all of a sudden a brainstorm happens. And so this one I'm going to say came through Daniel. I was just thinking that one of the things that would impress Gen Xers and would be, I guess, in one way or another, stand out to baby boomers is if we did something along the lines of something more visual and live. Have you all heard of flash mobbing? Flash mobbing is when people are milling about inside of a crowd and all of a sudden they come together and they start dancing or singing or whatever, and it draws so much attention people have to stop and look and videotape and post it on social media. And all those flash mobs that happen out in the world get to social media and they make it to the 11 o'clock news where the baby boomers are watching, and if they don't see it live, it's going to happen. Almost every scenario that we have that's an emergency, except for what Barbara was just mentioning about the train and getting out on what side with the lights, you could make up some scenario with the actors that don't have to be paid much to recreate the scenario as a flash mob. And I think that would stand out more to people because now, after they finish, you know, someone can make an announcement, and this has been a PSA from WMATA, and everybody will, of course, remember that. So there you have it.
question for you.
Since I'm on the Customer Service Committee, and I see that I think in your title it's Customer Service. At our last Customer Service Committee meeting, we had representatives from station operations there to talk about the role of the station manager. Do you overlap with that at all?
The station managers don't report in my chain of command. The station managers do not report up through my chain of command. In my portfolio, in my department, customer service is over the call center, for example, where customers call in. But I certainly work very closely with rail operations on what takes place in stations. So I'd be happy to hear any concerns you have or to try to respond to any questions you may have.
This is my refrain. I apologize for doing it, but I do it when I have opportunity to do it. I think the station managers are the face of Metro, and they're the people that most of the riders interact with. They don't interact with the train operators, more so on the bus side. They do operate with the bus drivers. So they're the first line there, and I think people feel that one of the ways that people feel they're getting good customer service is if they're getting good responses and high visibility. Just, I already have one wife and one daughter. Just saying the same thing to me, right? Right, I know. I'll never be you totally used to it. So anyway, that's just a broad comment. I think that, I'm sure you're cognizant of that.
Came up with an idea. Oh, yeah. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Sam Briefs. I'm sure most of you have seen me here before. And I just came up with a strategy to communicate the safety messages to the public. So I would recommend that you work with the media, news agencies, to maybe get that 3-minute video aired on TV or on the radio, or have the safety tips also aired on the TV stations or the radio.
First launched the video, we actually did put it on all the local TV stations, so that's a great suggestion. It's hard to sustain it because, you know, we can buy some time, but we run out of money. And then they do play, the TV stations do play them as public service announcements also, but usually only for 30 days, and then it stops. Yeah. So you're making me think, though, that maybe we should, after some time passes, go back and ask for a second round, you know, just to keep it out there. Good suggestion. Thank you.
Lynn, I'm curious. I know that you had said when I saw the original presentation at the committee meeting that there was going to be on TV, but I hadn't seen it. And I'm not really a news TV watcher. How many of you have seen it on somewhere on TV? Two of you? Okay.
I saw it in several stations.
Did you? Okay. How about you, Marianne? Okay. So, all right. So, good to see you.
But it was not in the news during the news time or whatever. It was like in the middle of a show, like PSA. That's how I saw it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see it in the news.
Well, then I'm surprised I didn't see it. Yeah. No, I mean, I am because I have the TV on a lot. Okay, thank you. Any Anything else for us? All right. Thanks for asking. We appreciate the opportunity to give feedback. And yep, it's like the captive audience is the message of the day. It's like on the plane, what else can you do if you're sitting there waiting to take off? And so use it. Okay, we're going to back up on the agenda, and I'm going to assume there are, if there are any changes to the agenda? Hearing none, we'll proceed. And Ben, I didn't even see you come in. Welcome. let's go ahead and go to the minutes. You have them in your packet. They were also distributed earlier in the month, attached as a draft to one of the weekly weekly bulletins, right, James? Yes, okay. Any feedback, any corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, I will, can we, I can never remember on this one. Can we just, do we have to still vote? Okay, I need a motion to accept. Okay, seconded. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Any abstentions? Thank you. Caroline, come in. I hadn't seen you there. You were hiding in the corner. So we're at Caroline and then some. Is that one still on, maybe? Okay, we have time for committee reports. That starts with me. As always, you have the chair report in the packet, I believe. Let me double check. Yes, it's there just before the back. And I was able to attend the committee meetings on the second Thursday and the fourth Thursday this April of the month, as I try to do every month. There are volumes of information available on the website, but I want to just hit a few highlights. That at the first meeting in April, there was a governance committee meeting, WMATA's governance committee, and the topic of that particular meeting was to hear testimony from various people, anyone who had volunteered, and people that I believe were solicited to give statements of what they thought WMATA should be looking for in a new general manager. I think most of you have heard that there was some debate. There was originally a search that was undertaken and some candidates found, and then there were some statements about do we really want a transportation expert or somebody that's more financially based or turnaround expert or whatever. And so they were taking input from interested parties. I was asked to speak on behalf of the RAP at that meeting. And it was a very humbling experience because it was, you know, the representative of the Secretary of Transportation for Maryland and the Secretary of Transportation for Virginia and several other people that are over think tanks or various things. But they all gave very carefully thought and constructive opinions about what WMATA should be looking for in a general manager. There's actually been something in the news, so I suspect any of you that follow the news, you probably have seen articles or something online about some of the comments, and there was not any uniform agreement on, you know, transportation experience or not. Some felt it was extremely important. It's not a simple industry that you just step right in and can hit the ground running. Somebody said it wasn't one for on-the-job training, but others felt leadership was really what came up as the most common point was that somebody that's a great leader that can get the other people on board and see what has to be done and make it happen. So I know the governance committee within WMATA is working on that and trying to get enough agreement and consensus so that they are able to move forward quickly and have somebody at the helm that can be the leader for the organization going forward. There was also a customer service committee meeting that I attended, and it was interesting because we talk all the time about what the writers feel and think and how what we feel and what people we know. And there was a survey done of the employees and the concerns they had and their attitudes on working at WMATA. And it was interesting. I believe it was Lynn herself that gave the report on the results of the survey. And the number one concern of the employees is safety, you know, that they feel that the company can be doing, the agency can be doing more to keep them safe. And one of the things we'd heard about, I think some of us have heard about, is just the whole chasing down the fare evaders, that sometimes station managers feel very much threatened, you know, when they try to enforce that. So they're getting help from the police and others. And but there's safety in a lot of different ways, every way imaginable. You know, is the equipment safe? Are the procedures safe? Are they followed? And can you talk about it, some issue you see without fear of repercussion, that sort of thing? So safety is first and foremost on the minds of the employees. And also, not only it came from the survey from the employees, but they had the representative of one of the bargaining groups that was there to speak about their own, you know, position and interest in improving the safety culture still. There were also concerns, the second and third concerns of the employees were, you know, just like a lot of employees, would be the cleanliness of the restrooms and communications internal to WMATA. So communication is, I think, in almost any organization, they run the gamut from great ones to not so great, but it's always a challenge to who's told what, when, and how. There's also an update on the new fair payment, the pilot. And I can't remember if the PPP group has had that. Is that still coming up for you, isn't it? Yeah, it's still coming up. But the update they gave at that point was just that there were over 3,000 people who had said they were interested in participating in the pilot. And after they sent out the packets, and I was one of them, and I know Deborah Titus is another. I don't know there was anyone else in this group. Is that correct? There wasn't that I knew of. Okay. There was a packet sent out with the card and the instructions about what to do. They had only, I think, at least as of this, the day of this meeting, which is now almost 4 weeks ago, it was a little over 400 people that had actually registered, gone out and set up to be part of the pilot. It was a far greater abandon rate than they expected. It could very well be, as it was with me, you know, I have participated, but on a very limited basis, because I had forgotten if I once knew that your smart benefits isn't part of the pilot, because they didn't have that set up yet. So anybody who does a rail-to-bus transfer, bus-to-rail transfer, and gets a discount, you won't really get that, because not every, unless your bus and your rail are both in the pilot, which is highly unlikely. And if even a station that you go to, there's only the one end of the station that will have the actual fare gate that you handle it. So there are a lot of impediments to participation that makes it not that easy. But the project team is supplementing that with internal people trying to do more things. I will say that the feedback they have gotten, though, has been very, I think, overwhelmingly positive. I certainly was for me. I mean, it's new equipment. It's brand new. It works fine. You go right through. So I haven't seen any issues with that. It's just there are a lot of things that not yet in the pilot. The last meeting of the month on the 23rd, I did go to a safety and security committee meeting, and they did have an update. You know that right after the incident in January, there were a list of 10 different things that they could see from just the earlier research that were good ideas to do, and they're well on their way to making all of them happen. If it was a one-time thing, it's done. If it's something that was going to be done over a period of time, it's still in the works. It's in process. They have come up with four new things to do, and they're all really very much, I think, more engineering equipment-oriented, but there are things that they're doing. Those have been publicized and are on the website, too. That's it for those committee meetings. So I'm sorry that took a while, but we'll move on to...
Can I ask you a question?
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I did see that and then
forgot.
That's
okay. In regards to the conversation about the pilot, was there any discussion about expanding the pilot to more stations or more bus routes?
I didn't hear that. I think they were looking for more people, I think, to participate still. It's scheduled, I believe, to finish in June is the last I remember. John's nodding. Okay. I think this is more a proof of concept than a full-fledged pilot because it isn't everywhere, so not everybody can do it. But I don't know of anything more. There was one piece of feedback, though, from one of the board members from Momata that he was concerned that there hadn't been enough usage from a mobile point of view. People using either their devices or smart cards that weren't smart trip cards. And there was some concern about that. So I think there's going to be another report maybe next month. I'm doing good. You're nodding most of the time. What? Oh, okay. John's going to add something there.
I think, I nodded and then you kept going in your sentence, which I needed to unnod. I think what's going to happen is after the pilot phase ends, rather than, and I'm not sure if this was ever the original goal, but rather than just sort of roll straight into full-scale implementation, there is going to be a report on sort of, you know, the program's effectiveness and is it doing what we want and is what it doing still what Metro needs it to be doing? And I think maybe a little bit more of a step back before the next step than perhaps than was anticipated at the outset of the pilot. So I don't know that I'm not sure when. I think the next NEP update is going to be in July. NEP, New Electronics Payments Program.
The next report, or what's in July?
The next update to the board.
Oh, the next update to the board, okay.
But I do believe that, and I'm not sure if they'll have that sort of after-action report done by then or not.
Yeah. Towards your question, I know that there are certainly some aspects, of course, that haven't been tested. Oh, I know one of the things that I asked about is that some of the things, like smart benefits, it's really back-end. It's not really with the card that you're using. It's more something in the back-end system. So it not being in the pilot is not a hindrance. That sort of thing may be true of some of the other things that aren't in it, but it's definitely not a full-scale pilot of everything that would ever be in it.
Right. I was just thinking from a quantitative perspective, that was really low, especially because Lynn said there was 400,000 trips a day, and then this was 400 people. So there's quite a gap there.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't remember how many trips that actually represented, but it's just a percent. Any other questions on that? Okay, on to budget and finance. Do we have a report? We do not have the chair. Do we have anybody that's a part of that committee that can speak to what they've been doing? No one will admit to it. Okay. No report. Customer service, Mr. Pott.
I have requested for the customer service committee meeting that we get some people from station operations present. And I want to thank James for responding very quickly. Not only did he get one person from station operations, he got three people from station operations. And I thought it was an interesting meeting. I just want to hit a couple points. It's a matter of interest to people, maybe interest to people. So there are 590 station managers in Metro. Station managers are recruited from bus operators. And it's strictly based on seniority. You're number one in seniority and a bus operator, and you want to become a station manager, get the job.
With a couple of caveats. You have to pass tests and various tests. But you're you're a candidate, if you want to be.
You're a candidate. There are no outside candidates. They receive fairly extensive training. And with regard to training, we were invited, several of us were invited to participate in the training. We show up one day for half an hour, 45 minutes, and talk about customer service. And I know that Barbara and I are invited. I think I can't do it tomorrow. Barbara's going.
And just for the record, it was Bob's idea.
It was my idea.
But I'm going.
But I made sure I was going to be out of town.
No.
Yeah. Station managers are all supposed, during rush hour, AM, PM, are supposed to be out of the kiosks and available to the public. And finally, you know, they have a lot of responsibility. There's no question. One interesting thing that we did hear is if there's a problem and they need more resources, they can call for more resources. But the resources have to arrive by train. Which is an interesting conundrum. Huh? How do you, if there's a problem with the train in the station, how do you get it from the other direction? While there are vehicles available to bus supervisors who can drive to a problem where there's a bus, the bus is not the problem. Nobody can drive to a metro station to assist the manager. Well, I mean, there are just a number of interesting things that came up. And, just want to share them with you. And for those people who are on the customer service committee and who want to come to the next meeting, I would like to at least continue the conversation and see what we want to do, if anything, as a follow-up. So,
Bob, was there anything that was surprising talking to you? You talked to some actual station managers?
We talked to the supervisor, the management, the high level.
Okay. Was there anything that you didn't expect or something that was different about how they looked at things? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I this is my own naivete. I don't understand that much. I thought that since I think station managers are important, I was surprised that station managers are only selected based on seniority bus operators. So you might have the most enthusiastic, helpful, good guy who wants to be a station manager until he or she works long enough to get into the system. Move up the system. They're not gonna. So that seniority thing surprised me. The requirement that station managers be outside of the kiosk during rush hour surprised me. Happy as a rule. I'm not sure how it works in practice. I think we talked about it. I say, you know, there's some stations that managers really are out.
Did you ask them what they do when, I tell you, no matter what happens with my card and it's screwed up in whatever way, I say, okay, my card doesn't work. It seems like they just do something magic and it works again. It doesn't, I was curious as what they do because it seems like
they run the card. I don't know, they just press a button in there or something.
I think what they're doing is typically if it's not working, it's because like maybe you didn't, your last exit or your last entrance, whichever you had before, didn't take somehow and so they're doing something to set it so it will. Yeah, it is fast.
I have a question.
I think we have a couple questions for you.
Did you ask or did they provide a reason as to why backup can only arrive by train?
Well, I felt like I should almost clarify that, you know, that's how they get there. I don't know if it's like there's a rule that they can't come any other way. It's just that they don't have cars. They don't give cars to the station management crew.
The Barbara suggested bicycles.
No, it wasn't exactly a real suggestion.
No.
I mean, if they're five blocks away, it's not like they have to get on a train, but it does create a challenge most of the time. I mean, and there's traffic is bad. You might be able to get there if you're coming from the opposite direction of the problem, but it is. They said they have known times where they did enlist some of the bus supervisors in their cars to come and help. I think I have a better sense of why, you know, every time we have the serious backup and crowding and people not knowing what's what, it's because we may just have the one station manager there and the others aren't there yet, and they've got their hands full doing everything that needs to be done.
Certainly, it would make sense to get at least, I would expect, get a few of them in cars or allow the bus supervisors to spot. But I think that probably is a labor contract. I'd imagine it's a labor contract. You should. Anyway, we'll.
I was going to say, having been at this meeting, one of the things they talked about related to the people who are selected to be station managers is that, you know, the way that they rise up and the fact that station operations doesn't get to sort of interview or choose their own candidates is determined by the labor contracts. So it becomes a broader issue. It's not just station operations not really having control. It's that it's legally mandated through the labor contracts that the operators rise up this way, sort of through the bus ranks. So they, you know, they freely admitted that they wish they had more control over these candidates, but that their hands were tied, that they were bound to basically let them rise up through the system this way. Another thing they mentioned was, and maybe Bobby can provide some fine details on this, but apparently up until a few months ago, you could sort of switch, you know, the operators, the train operators, the bus operators could sort of switch positions as a way to wipe disciplinary infractions away, basically. So, like, if you had a certain amount of disciplinary infractions as a train operator, you could switch to become a different, or you could switch to become a station manager or vice versa, and those infractions would not follow you. So you would have employees switching between the positions to sort of avoid any disciplinary action that might come as a result of infractions. And so just recently, within the last few months, they had made it so that you couldn't do that. They had negotiated with the unions that your infractions had to follow you from job to job. So at least they've made that change, but I was surprised it was so recent, obviously.
As Bob alluded to, at the next customer meeting, we'll talk if we want to make a set of recommendations to the board, to the staff. And so as always, you know, any of you that have input that you'd like to give now or later, I mean, that's welcome. Please, you can report it to Bob, right? Or James. James is always glad to take it. Any other questions for Bob? Oh, yes, Catherine. Sorry.
I'm just kind of fascinated by this process of becoming a station manager, how you come up through the bus operations. Is it possible to come up through the train operator side? It seems that the bus operations are a totally different ballgame than the train side. So to suddenly take somebody who's a bus operator and make them in charge of a station, which is a different world, if you're at least taking a train operator.
We did talk about that, and there's two different paths, and I can't remember if it was two paths for bus operators. Maybe bus operators can become train operators or something. I don't remember, but I can get that answer. Do you? Good. And I think you can imagine that, you know, there are probably a lot of reasons somebody after 20 years of driving bus may be ready for a change for a lot of reasons, you know, and being a station manager is one of them. There's certainly experience with dealing with customers. Going into train operators, though, train operators don't have nearly the kind of interaction with the public, except in an emergency. So on day in and day out, they don't. So. You can get some very different pools of people.
I'm also curious if in the discussion that you had with the station managers, if there was any talk of what is, maybe this is just me and the various things, maybe it's an anecdotal thing, what it takes to change the direction of a fare gate and when the decision is made to change the direction. I feel that and I'm sure it's just based on bad experiences stick with you and the good ones don't as much, but I feel that there have been many times in stations where there have been a huge lines of people trying to get through one or two fare gates going out or in, and there are several fare gates that are not being used the other direction. I don't know what is required to switch those fare gates to allow the crowd to dissipate faster. It seems that the station managers often just stand there and look at the crowd.
Yeah, I will say we didn't talk about that. We talked about a similar concept, which was what it takes to change the direction of escalators. But the fare gates, I don't think we did, but we'll.
Right.
Yeah, it's quite all right. I was going to mention that, you know, I think as Catherine said, that is all about crowd control. So the station managers do have the ability to switch the directions of the fare gates as they see fit to control the crowds. As to the specifics, I think that's just up to the individual station managers. From what I've seen as acting as a Metro information person and actually, you know, working with the managers on the front line, during those times when there's heavy flow of traffic, that's where that out of the they should be out of the individual stations and on the floor helping to control those crowds. So that really plays a part, them being right there and the directions of the fare gates. And you know, like I said, that's up to the individual managers.
I think because Bob and I had discussed a lot about the station managers being outside the kiosk, what has been the observation? You know, it's like how many of you feel that it's the majority of the time in rush hour that there's a station manager outside the kiosk able to help people? How many of you think it is the majority of the time? Just kind of show your hands.
During rush hour.
During rush hour. Yeah, I do. But how many of you feel that it's the minority of the time that you see a station manager outside? Sounds like we have a lot of abstentions here. Just, I wanted to check that. Okay. All right, so that's clear as mud, right? Clear as mud. Okay, thanks. Did you have anything else, Bill?
Two of the last situations we were just talking about happened to me this afternoon while I was out in the system. The escalator was one, and they were doing repairs at Columbia Heights Station, and the up escalator was in the walking, you know, it was stationary, and so, you know, people are walking down, so it wasn't rush hour. So yeah, I'm thinking to myself, why are, you know, people being forced to walk upstairs and they shouldn't have to? I mean, I was going down, so it wasn't affecting me, but I'm looking at people having to deal with that. And the other one was on the way back home, I noticed that there were a bunch of, well, school had just let out, so there were a bunch of young men that were banging on the side, the metal side of the escalator ramp on the platform, and I mean loudly banging. They were, I guess they call themselves making music. But eventually, after about, I think about 10 minutes, no, it wasn't even 10 minutes because it was close to rush hour, the station manager, she did come down the escalator to find out because she was held up with, you know, helping people in the kiosk. Because I was wondering if she was going to come, and she did come. And, of course, they all tried to abstain from being the you know, the ones that were doing it, but they did stop because she came. So in their regards, at least, you know, she did come out of the kiosk today.
Well, and I need to clarify, and we're not saying out of the kiosk and all the way down to the platform, the rail platform. It's out of the kiosk so that they can see that the escalators aren't getting back, that the people are getting through the fare gates, that anybody that needs help is getting it. So. Okay, anything else on station managers or customer service? Because Dan's ready to talk. Because.
Well, just the other thing to mention about the station operators. You know, sometimes in order to help somebody, they actually have to go back in to the kiosk. So they could be out.
True.
But then
that's true.
Very
good point.
When they need to help somebody, they need to go back in.
Yeah. Well, that is something we did learn, is that there they have the ability in the district, wherever they work on a district or regional level, they can see the kiosks at the stations. They don't have a place where you can see everyone all at the same time, but you can go look at any station that you want and see what's happening there.
Yes. All right. The first thing is our next meeting on the 18th, we're having Tom Randall come to talk to us about the new electronic payment system pilot. So if anybody has some deep burning questions, that would be a good forum. Tom has always been very helpful in the past about just sitting and talking about things. So I think we'll find him very receptive. Let's see, the other areas that we're working in, we had a meeting last month with somebody from WMATA about phone apps, and the next step on that is we're drafting a potential resolution for you guys to take a look at about what we think that Metro could be doing more in that area. The other area, the final area, is with respect to priority seating on buses. We attended an AAC committee meeting where they were beginning to talk about that issue, and we're going to continue coordinating with them. I think we do have some value added on that issue because, you know, our mandate in terms of who we need to be representing is broader than the AAC committee. So I think that we would be a good voice in that conversation. Sure.
Just for coordination purposes, I was told at the my meeting that the AAC would be meeting on the 18th. I guess it would be in this room, along with this committee, to discuss priority seating as one of the agenda items on that meeting.
Yeah. Have to see if that'll coordinate, Pat, because we have Tom coming in already to talk to us. So.
Right. Okay. So I guess if you want to let James know, and James, you could let B know.
Do you know what? Do you guys have a full meeting, and then the committee meeting is after that, or is this just the committee meeting, Pat, that you're talking about on the 18th? Yeah.
Yeah, Patrick
Harris. We actually have a Metro Access meeting from 4 to 6. I think the meeting – this meeting, BRAC meeting, was going to start at 6, so I don't know how long that meeting was going to go, but I think members of the AAC on the Priority Seating Committee were going to then join the BRAC meeting, and that was my understanding.
Okay, so people will be there already until 6, is that what I'm hearing?
Metro Access meeting goes from 4 to 6, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think we could meet with people from, say, 6 to 6:30, and, you know, if somebody's interested. I mean, it's a little challenging because we have some other things already on our agenda. So I'm not sure exactly how to deal with this, but I'll talk to James.
Were you already planning to start at 6?
Well, we, you know, not everybody can get there until 6:30.
Okay.
So, you know, that's one issue. And then the other issue is
Mark wasn't coming, though, until 6:30.
Tom wasn't going to come to 6:30. And, you know, we want to respect him and not just have him be there for 15 minutes. And we also have this resolution to go over. But I'll talk to James, Pat, and, yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
No.
The important thing is that there's a willingness to work together.
For a second, back on budget and finance, is there any member here that's on that committee that has been at a recent meeting? I do know that one thing that happened in the last 30 days was that there was a budget hearing. And we all saw the proposed budget for the coming fiscal year, and there was a hearing with the public during April to get feedback on it. There were so many of the things that had been considered were pulled out of the budget, but there were still a few things like Minnesota Avenue parking. There were three different things. I think one of them that was apparently triggered the most controversy was the card that's used by an outside Which card is it? It's not VRE, is it, or is it? It's VRE. It was something like that, a card that worked in both places that was going to be discontinued. Okay. And that was going to be discontinued. Yeah, so that's something. Anyway, Jeremiah was able to go to that meeting and absorb what happens at a public hearing and how it works. Which, speaking of which, there is the leadership/governance committee, and one of the things I try to do is get to, as you know, all the meetings I can with my schedule. And there was a public hearing just last week in Alexandria, which I happen to be the representative for, and for the new Potomac Yard Metro Station that's proposed. And if you've seen in the news, there are four proposals out there for exactly where it would go and what it would look like. And the city of Alexandria has already come out saying they're in favor of proposal B, one of the four. And it was at the hearing the one that was the most popular by the people who spoke. But a close second was the people who wanted there to be no metro station there. And if you know the Potomac Yard shopping area, which, you know, I didn't even know where it was until a couple of years ago, so I'm not expecting people outside of Alexandria necessarily to know. But there's a huge shopping area, and there are some townhouses, a development that's right off of that road and right past the railway, and it's south and closer to the water east. And B would, I think, be the lesser evil, but for them, they think it's going to radically change their neighborhood and the vista and people coming into the neighborhood that don't have any business in the neighborhood, because it's right off of the, there's a pathway, a pedestrian path. So that was a very vocal group, an organized and articulate and prepared group that spoke, quite a few people. So it was attended by, I'd say, it was over 100, maybe 120 people, something like that. It was a very, it was a big hearing. And there was a very, there were, you know, easels with all of the different maps. And also, it was following the release of the environmental impact statement. So very, very high interest in this. And I think the decisions are over the next month or two. Different entities will have other hearings and votes. So it was very interesting. It sounds like old news now, but some of us did go to the 7000 series dedication since our last meeting. That was kind of fun, and I was very happy that we had a whole lot of speakers that spoke very briefly, as opposed to when the Silver Line opened, when we had a lot of speakers that didn't speak briefly. That same day, I was invited to a bus guidelines meeting. I didn't know there was a group of people that had been for over a year working together to come up with a very concrete, documented set of guidelines for bus. And any of you who've been here when Jim Henry has been here and know that it's always seemed to me like it was very structured, but they tried to do certain things with the distance between bus stops and how the service was provided and all these things. But apparently there's not a comprehensive document that says these are the guidelines we want to follow. And I think it's a great idea, and I think they're nearing the end of this study, and I think we will be happy with some of the things coming from it. So it won't be left to just whim about, or not that it's whim now, but I mean that there'll be definite guidelines about everything associated with the stations, the stops, the frequency, everything. So I think it's good. And if you're interested, I can provide more documentation. And then the last but not least was the emergency drill that Will and Lorraine and I attended. And Will, would you like to just give a quick recap of this, so people are probably tired of hearing me talk?
No, we love your voice, Barbara.
Well, let's see. Out of, let's see. Well, Patrick was there too. So,
right.
Yes. Yeah. Of course, we have to hear from Patrick because out of the four of us that went, only one of us made the train. We somehow got misinformation about where the entrance to get to the train was at. So, so we were a little lost there. But then we do understand that Patrick didn't make it on. But it was very well attended. There was some, well, not some, there's quite a bit of an unorganization there. So I don't know where, you know, someone dropped the ball at, you know, but at the same time, you know, we made the best of it and we latched onto another component of working with the group there. And we were able to, I guess, get involved to a degree. So we really didn't get a chance to get a feel for what the emergency preparedness was. It was more of the crowd, I guess you might say, crowd feel of what would happen if you were in the emergency and trying to react to it. So, So that was pretty much it. So I'll turn it over to Patrick for here.
I was pleased. We had several people from my committee. A couple of people in wheelchairs, myself, visually impaired. We were hoping that we could get someone who had a service animal because I think that would be a tremendous learning exercise. As I stated earlier tonight, the focus was on educating the responders and firemen and WMATA personnel. I think that we were given very specific instructions on what they expected, how we were going to act. Everything that when we were on the train was monitored. We were given the scenario and assisted with evacuation of the train, particularly those individuals who had scooters and chairs and that sort of thing. I thought they felt it was very useful. And being on some of the, you know, having lifting, getting the disabled person out, getting their wheelchair out, and evacuating them along the tracks was interesting. Hadn't been on a track bed, at least on a live station, so I was surprised at just how rough and filled with debris it was and that, and thinking that you might have to walk along that track, particularly if I had a service animal, would be something that I wouldn't want to do. So that was interesting, and I think that's one of the reasons why I stressed to Lynn that in the upcoming exercises, they need to get sort of a full range of people, young, old, able-bodied, disabled, so that they can learn how to communicate effectively. Climbing out the side of a train was kind of interesting. The ladder was not as sturdy as I thought it would be, but managed it fine. And just navigating, I felt that the second part of the exercise, being sort of trucked over to the school and having individuals take certain information, I wasn't really clear as to how that was supposed to work, what they were supposed to get out of it, and if that part of the exercise was a success. So I was a little bit unclear as to, you know, the quality of that part of the exercise. But I thought the first part, with respect to the train, the emergency, and all was good. It would be interesting to be able to look at a scenario in a different type of an emergency, a different type of scenario. One like La Fon Plaza, I think, was much more complicated than what we saw outside. But I think it was good, but it was more of an exercise of the community training WMATA, as opposed to people in general getting their questions answered and being trained on what to do when this emergency starts. But it was well done. I think they were pleased, and a lot of people.
Sure. Go ahead, Will.
All right. And to concur with Patrick said about the not understanding what the second part of the exercise was, taking questions from everyone, I think they got A stars on that because we were all thoroughly confused, and I think that was exactly what they wanted anyway, so they did not miss the mark there at all.
Now, I would like to say that I think that part went pretty well. I mean, they had a very the one thing it was really clear when you got in there was like one guy, he was in charge, and he was telling people where to go and what to do. But it was a transfer point. It's like if in this situation, so we were part of the community trying to board the train or yeah, and yeah, we didn't get on the train because there was an incident on this train. And so there were a lot of community people there, and they transported us by bus to the school. And then once we got there, you had to go to various points to say who you were, how many people, what you needed. So it seemed like it was very carefully thought out. I'm sure they learned a lot. It wasn't perfect, but I think they probably learned a lot about what they need to do. Lorraine, you want to add something?
Yes, because the bottom line is that what Metro is trying to do is that if there is an incident, a major incident, and the station has to be closed, they will transfer all the people that are stuck in that station to what they would call transfer centers. They apparently have are identifying locations for each and every one of the stations in that we have in the Metro system, so that if there's an incident in any of the stations, they can get buses to transport the people to these transfer centers, and then from there in buses transferred to different locations, take the people to more or less closer to their destinations, because they realize that by the time everything is solved, or what if it is solved and on time, you may have missed your ride, you may have missed your other bus that you were supposed to take. So they are trying to then transport you to at least to the correct county that you are going to, and then from there try to coordinate, etc. So
and the vehicle they chose to, the way they chose to do this, I thought was a good way, was that they gave people little slips of paper that said you are a mother with 10-year-old and a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old and three little kids. I had three little kids, and so they were trying to, without having all of those people present, they were trying to simulate saying, you know, what would we have to deal with if that were to occur? And each of us had two identities that we were at various times. So I thought that was a decent approach.
I have something completely unrelated that I'd like to share. Okay. Is that okay?
Is there anything more about anybody questions about the emergency drill? Okay.
It just occurred to me. I was on Friday. I attended the technical committee meeting of the Washington COG, Council of Governments Transportation Unit. So this occurs on a monthly basis. Basically what it is it's the people that work technically at every transportation agency in the region, including WMATA. They make presentations directly or have consultants that are working on the development of projects or things that are interesting that have to do with the transportation in the metro area. It's hard for people that are working to attend, but there are materials online. I think it's from 10 to 12. Just to give you an example, one of the presentations this last time around was by somebody from WMATA that works in station access, and they were doing an interesting study which was looking at the ease within which people can access a station in terms of walking. And the bottom line is they were looking at it in a way that I think Metro should always look at it, in the sense that if you improve the pedestrian access to stations, you can get more riders. This occurs on a monthly basis. You can look at it at Washington Council Government's website. And for you guys, and you're here maybe because you're already interested in transportation in the region, it gives you a more broader approach. You know, another presentation that was made was on the study for high-speed rail between Washington and Richmond and the status of that as well. So it's interesting stuff. So I just thought I'd mention that to you guys.
Thank you. I think that's a good segue. We're in now. Any announcements? Anyone would like to? Bonnie?
I don't have an announcement. I would like to revisit the topic from
last. Thank you. Thank you. I just, as you brought that up. Why don't you go ahead, reintroduce it and talk about.
So last week I brought up the idea that we are representative of the ridership of WMATA, but we don't actually have a streamlined or mass way to get information from the riders. Opening a Facebook page or a Twitter account in which we receive information, not disseminate information, would allow us to get more information. Just kind of opening it up to what we think is possible and what we can actually do there.
Sorry. I sent that topic to you a few days ago to think about before this meeting. We did talk about it briefly at the leadership meeting that we had right after the monthly meeting in April. And I think it was Dan's idea that we probably best bring it here because it's kind of a broad discussion. I think of it as an outreach discussion, whether it's Twitter or some other solution is something. Catherine, go ahead. Is that what you wanted to talk about or something else?
It's not, but I think it's a good idea. My main concern with opening some sort of social media account is that you're going to get all the cranky people who are providing comments. Like this morning with the red line issues or whatever goes on, all you're going to hear about are Metro sucks, fix it, which is not terribly helpful.
If we could spend a little bit of time on that, I know that it was the day we had the dedication of the 7,000 service. I happened to be standing there on the platform, nothing to do, like we talked about, and next to someone who handles WMATA's Twitter and one of a few people that are involved in that. And she said with Twitter, she would caution that you have to do something with what you get, that people want feedback and a response, and it takes manpower to do that. And I think that the biggest question I have in general, when this has come up in the past when we talk about outreach, how do we tell people who to tell what to? Right now there's just thousands of people every month give comments and feedback of a certain type to the call center or through the internet form that goes to people that Lynn has under her. And how do we tell people, well, this particular topic we want you to tell us, but it's still everything else that goes to them. I'm just trying to struggle with how it would all work together. Just a question. Dan, you had something you wanted to say about that?
Well, two lines of, yes, this is a topic. Two things. In general, you know, let's say that we would like to do something along those lines. My question is, you know, what would the procedures be? You know, would it be something that we ourselves can just decide and then we start, or is it something where we would draft a resolution that we would pass to the board, or you would make a recommendation to the board as to something that, you know, we would do that we're not doing already?
I think it's something in the latter sphere okay. We're talking about. We can't just start. I think that we would have to make sure that the board is.
So maybe it's something that one of the committees can pick up where we can have a good discussion about it, because I think that if there's anything that I've learned about the internet is that it's incredibly flexible, and I don't think you can dismiss things as automatically being the same as other experiences.
Right.
You know, for example, I would love us to have an ability to get feedback from people on a specific topic. You know, I would love to be able to have a group of people that would sign in. I don't know how it works with Twitter, or just have, you know, something comes up at a meeting and we have a specific question that we can one sentence question, and we just send it out there, and all of a sudden we get 1,000 responses, yes or no. You know, that to me, so you're not just getting random
right.
feedback,
you, right.
random things from
it's
people,
started.
You know, there's specific yeah. questions, you know, that you're asking them, and I see absolutely no reason why that couldn't be done, and I think that I don't see why people wouldn't sign up to be part of that, and they periodically get questions, and they answer them yes or no, or they just ignore the question, but they feel part of the process. It's very, you know, we're representative of them, but the way technology is, I don't think it, you know, you can have a wider body. You don't need to have representatives in the sense. People can answer directly themselves. By the way, I feel that about Congress as well. I think we can have 10,000 Congress members as opposed to what we have because of that.
Will, did you want to talk about this issue?
Yeah.
But then I think the other thing as well is we would, if we do something like that, we would have to have somebody responsible for doing something with it and, you know, right. Making sure that, you know, it isn't just, oh, we'll receive this information and then we don't do anything with it or we don't feel, you know, there's a responsibility that somebody on this committee or a group of people would have to take before we do it.
Yeah, I let me just back up a second. No, I think even 2 years, 3 years ago, we were having the same at a 35,000 foot level, the same discussion is how do we get the input from more people. One of the things we tried a couple of years ago was having something that was called a listening session, and Alexandria happened to be the first one. And we did get 20 or 30 people to come. We had almost as many Metro people there as we had customers, but we still had some, whereas then we scheduled one in Maryland, and unfortunately it was just before Thanksgiving. I don't think it was nearly as good a time, and there was nobody that came. But we also then proceeded the next year to say, well, instead of sponsoring our own things, why don't we see, could we go with WMATA when they go places, because they have a calendar that's packed full of events, you know, festivals and fairs and, you know, I don't know, restaurant something or other out in the mall. But they have places, and can we go with them? And we were thinking that would be a way to get a lot of people to talk to. But this is like light years ahead. This is much, much more potential on something like this, obviously. We just have to work out how it fits with it. They already, like, with then talk tonight about the survey they did after the incident. They have ways that they can put out the word, and then they get thousands to respond. They did the same thing on the general manager issue. When the day that speakers came to say what they thought we should find in a general manager, she had already gotten, I can't remember, 1,000 people, I think, that had given her feedback. It was a multiple choice. What do you think are the most important qualities, that sort of thing. So they're using that. They have people that do that for surveys. This isn't necessarily Twitter, but I think, you know, we're talking about, I think it's sometimes a little bit we're talking about a principal, and another is this supposed to be a fellow, is it Twitter or what? I do think that what we choose to do is certainly doable. We'd have to figure out exactly how it all would fit together. But it's a need that we've had for a long time.
Which committee should take it?
Huh?
Which committee should take it to bring back some more thoughts?
Well,
we started it.
I think that makes sense. I think it does make sense because it's a new program for us. It's something new to do that we have. It's not really customer service. It's does anybody disagree with that? And you're on it, right? And you're on it? Okay. Did you want to say something, though? Okay. And Kathy, is this still on the new subject or this subject? Not this subject. Okay. Is there any more discussion we want to have on? Yes, Bob.
I just wonder, is this something
branded? The rack. The rack.
Can I answer that from my personal point of view? So I think that there are a lot of initiatives from WMATA's perspective where they try to get information. If we're the rack as the ridership's, if we're representing the ridership, then I think it's stronger and more compelling if we are kind of a standalone. I mean, obviously, the name still has ties to WMATA, but if it's more, I'm a writer and I'm asking for your opinion as a writer, as opposed to this is WMATA and they have put together this organization on the side and they're looking for information from this organization. I feel like there's just a lot of conflict of interest.
Yeah. Does anyone disagree with that?
The council responds to the board, to the Metro board. So there is so much distancing. You know, we cannot do any kind of distancing because RAC responds to the Metro board. So
I think we can have a meeting or some discussion and come back to everybody with maybe a proposal.
I'd like to broach the subject with the board. Also, I don't want us to do a lot of work and have somebody say, gee, I think that really helps.
Yeah, but let us think about it because a lot of this, I have suspect, is how you present it.
Yep.
And let us scope it out a little bit.
Yep, sounds good. And next month is we see the board for our quarterly in
June. I think
June.
We can talk about it on the 18th.
Yeah. Catherine. Patient.
To whom can we provide feedback about the new real-time bus arrival signs on many of the major routes? Is anybody interested in hearing feedback
on that? I'm sure they are. We had somebody here even once that talked about it, and I'm trying to remember who that was. I don't remember, but I'm sure James can find out who the right person is. Feedback on the new. It was one of people that spoke to us. Maybe it was Mr. Rodmer. It was because he was here about emergencies, but he still might have talked about the signage or something.
It's very brief feedback. Speed it up.
Oh.
It is, holy smokes, it is painfully slow, the cycling through of the buses. You have to sit there and spend several minutes watching it go through every bus that is going to come through the next morning before it gets around to telling you that there's a bus coming in 3 minutes.
I'm curious where you're seeing it.
I see it the most on 16th Street, but I know that there are other.
I see it at the Pentagon, and, yeah.
Yes.
6 o'clock tomorrow morning
The cycling is incredibly slow, both, I guess it would be horizontally and vertically. It cycles through and tells you the next 72 buses or something that are going to come, including the ones that are coming tomorrow, before it gets back to the beginning to tell you the ones that are coming next in, say, 3 minutes. Plus, the bus names are so long that it also cycles through the entire name of the bus horizontally. The whole thing is just extraordinarily slow. I think it's fabulous that this exists, real-time
it's
information.
But not
is
how
great.
It's executed right now.
Speed it up. Yes. I think there are.
That's it?
Does. Well,
I've never
the one
used
that
it.
That had audio. And there that's are, what I was going to comment on.
There are, yeah, probably. I haven't tried that. I don't know how slowly they speak at
no,
you.
No, Catherine, will start from the very beginning and tell you the next bus. So when I pressed it just because I was standing here, just out of curiosity, I said, well, I don't need this, but since I'm on the Ridership Advisory Council, I might as well press this button. And you're right, the scrolling was like 72 minutes away, and I said, I don't need that, and I pressed the button, and it said, the next S2 bus is in 4 minutes. I say, thank you.
It was the same button for both? When you said you pushed a button and you got all of this.
Oh, it's the audio button that tells you about the next bus. Yeah. Right, and it does cycle through all of them, like you say,
but it starts
from the beginning, right.
So you can press it when you show up, yes. And it starts at the beginning as opposed to showing up halfway through.
Absolutely.
The cycle. Is that for the display, too, though?
No,
yeah,
just the audio.
Display, if you don't control these.
No, the two things
right.
are unrelated.
Yeah, okay.
No. Yeah. So whatever it's saying is potentially unrelated to whatever it's showing. It'll be the same series of buses, but because they started at different points, you'll be at a different point in the cycle of... Well, because it sounds like the audio is on demand,
yeah.
Whereas the video one is just whenever you happen to show up.
I'll do some playing with that. Yeah, I want to find it. Okay. Let's
all play with the buses.
I just had only experienced the video. Almost worked to me.
Even if you could press the button, it still doesn't look like it's a well-run organization. I mean, that was my response when I looked at it. It was like 128 minutes for the next bus. I was like, these guys are a bunch of jokers. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it made me wonder if that meant mine wasn't coming. Because if they're telling me about the one that's the next one, I thought maybe my one in 4 minutes wasn't coming. Thank you. We'll find out. Yes. Ben.
This is completely unrelated.
Yeah,
we're on
sharing time now.
Yeah. I wanted to thank James and our board secretary, Jennifer, for organizing these happy hours. I don't know if other jurisdictions have been having them, but D.C., we had our D.C. REC members as well as the D.C. board members having happy hour and meeting with just getting to sit down and having an hour and a half conversation. And I wanted to know if there's possibility to follow up on ideas that we had. I know we talked about a lot of different things, Stephanie and I, and I think Ryan was also there. And one of the things I brought up with Leith, who's in charge of the district's Department of Transportation, but also on the board, is since the Metro's website, as I'm sure most of you have been on it, it's pretty awful. It's really difficult to find any information that's useful, and if you do, you have to dig around a lot and just buying your own ticket, adding money to it. It's like you have to press like 17 buttons before you're done. And so an idea we talked about is how do we actually make it more simple but actually make it more accessible to people so they can easily get what they need done, as well as finding out what the actual purpose that WMATA has a website for, just to narrow down their focus. And so we came to the idea about doing a hackathon of partnering with local community, the tech community, and basically, you know, inviting anyone who wants to help create a content design for a website to come forward and just have a little competition. There could be some kind of prize involved, and then after WMATA selects the winner of a conceptual design for a website, then there would be two options. The person who developed the website, the conceptual design, can then either go forward and create the website, of course, given certain requirements like disability, language, blah, 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 so on and so forth, or WMATA can then contract the idea out to a outside person, vendor, who can then develop the website from there on. And this is an idea that Lee said was fantastic, and I just wanted to know if there's any way for, you know, when these kind of organic ideas appear, obviously these can also come from people not on the rack, people from the general public. What can we do to follow up on these ideas?
There are people at WMATA responsible for the website. And James, what can you, go ahead.
That meeting greet between the D.C. and the D.C. RAC members and the D.C. board members, I was made aware of that comment regarding the WMATA website that was taken to media relations. And the feedback that I was given was that WMATA is in the planning stages for a full website redesign. That was all the information that I was given.
Well, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, if you have any individual comments regarding what type of input you would like to have on that redesign, I would encourage you to document that, as well as the idea regarding the hackathon. Submit that to the board in the form of a written document, just so that you have that noted. But as far as what is being planned at this time, that's all the information that they would release to me.
Yeah, before the Silver Line went in, so we're talking a full year ago, and then they were telling us about, they made a very strong presence on the website for the Silver Line itself, and even have its own section or something. And I heard at that time that the website was going to be totally redesigned. There was an understanding and acknowledgement, and I think Lynn is certainly an involved player. I don't know if maybe it belongs to the media people, but I know as a communication tool, she's definitely in that loop. It certainly would have to be partnering with them. But that absolutely we can draft a proposal, the idea. And I don't know who all was part of that. I know Leif is brand new. I mean, he's been on the board for weeks, maybe a month or two. I don't know who all was there, but we can talk about how that proceeds.
Yeah, we can work on a proposal and bring it to customer service, whatever committee, and then go from there.
Yeah, and, you know, I think you could argue whether it's Triple P again or customer service. I mean,
lot of the conversation that, you know, that we have had about, you know, Metro-branded apps and what's the benefit of doing that. So, you know, listening to you, I was thinking that some of the ideas aren't brand new, as in isn't the first time, you know, that somebody's thought of them, but, you know, the aggregation of those ideas and, you know, passing them on. And as James mentioned, you know, I think a lot of us are interested in, you know, what's the follow-through or what's the plan and so forth. It's refreshing to know that the website is going to be redeveloped, but to the extent that these type of things can be incorporated is interesting.
Would it be worth having someone, you know, like Lynn just came today, coming to us or coming to a committee and just asking us for our ideas or giving us some little bit of a presentation?
Yeah.
No? Okay.
I'm thinking maybe even further back. John, wasn't there something during your time where somebody came to us and asked us what we wanted in the new website? I have a vague recollection of that.
I mean, I know that the website redesign procurement has been going on, or at least the procurement was, yeah, probably a year and a half or 2 years ago. I don't know.
Okay.
What the process is or where they are in the process.
I think sometimes, you know, OMATA is really caught in the middle of, you know, everybody will say you need a better website, but the moment you get a better website, it's why aren't you putting money into fixing your trains and your tracks and your...
John, did they have, when do we expect that procurement to be awarded? Do we know? Okay. You think it's already happened?
I know it was out, but it was quite a while ago.
Okay.
I don't know.
So if they're doing some designs, it's kind of interesting. I would think that they would want to at least have the stakeholders look at it and comment on it from an accessibility point of view. If they design it and it's not accessible, that's going to be a problem. And there's certainly plenty of guidance for making websites accessible, but I work in an agency where they don't all the time, and it's really bad. So I don't know. I kind of think that if they're already doing work, being able to show some mock-ups of what they're doing and getting feedback from this group and maybe AAC would be a good thing before they publish it.
I just can't tell you where they are in the process.
Yeah. Right.
So as far as this group wanting to make a statement about what we think should be done, regardless of what is happening or isn't happening, we don't know for sure then. We certainly can do that, and whether we want to do that as incorporated with one of the groups that we have already or have a special one for just this one topic by the people that are the most interested in doing that, I'm fine either way. So, because I know you're on the customer committee, but the PPP has been doing some technology stuff where you're looking at things like this. So I...
Well, we met with somebody from Media Relations, and Marianne, correct me if I'm wrong, that is, they told us that they were working on a new version. But we were dealing more with mobile apps
with mobile,
in that
yeah.
conversation,
yeah.
So we didn't talk about it much.
If you're doing a website, making that website usable on a mobile app, mobile device is just part of the same, or should be part of the same process.
Let me try to do so. We're running out of time, and for sure I don't want to run over tonight because we have been running over occasionally. And tonight, we were really good. We'll talk on Monday with the leadership team, and I think you have some great ideas, and we want to be able to share them, and yet we also have to respect whoever is responsible when it's already doing something, finding where that is, but they're not really wanting to talk about that right now, but we can at least make a statement of what we think is a good idea. So any other announcements? Hearing no objection, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you. Lots of good discussion tonight, guys. Thank you.
There's anything on here.
Not to lay it out. They're hiring. Yeah. Right. Go out and interview the readers, but you do go based on the things you think about readers.